All right, we're getting the Mishnah on the top of Tzadivav Amud Aleph. Chavite Kohen Gadol, Lishatan Ba'arichatan Ve'afiatan Bifnim. As opposed to the Shtei Lechem and Lechem Apanim, where we saw there was a machloket about the processing as well as the baking of them, with regards to the Chavite Kohen Gadol, their preparation, their kneading, Arichatam, their forming of them, setting them up, Ve'afiatam, and their baking, are all Bifnim. Vitochot et haShabbat, and as we saw already, that goes hand in hand. If you require that they need to be done bifnim, that means that they're nitkadesh. If they're nitkadesh to be pasul bilina, that means that they have to be done on the day that they are being brought. As well as the fact that we saw earlier in the Masechta that there is a need for them to be a afiyah na'a, that they have to be made in a nice baking in a fresh way. And so that also determined with regards to how it was processed. We had a machloket as to whether the baking or the basting and the frying of it was done first or last. And that all related to this idea that it was baked nicely. And so that would also indicate a necessity b'docha et haShabbat, as well as the fact that it's tamid. It's brought every single day. And so therefore it's something that it's a chuvah with a particular time. And that usually means that it's docha et haShabbat. Tchinatan v'harkadatan Enu docha et haShabbat. The milling of it and the sifting of it is not docha Shabbat. Klal amar Rabbi Akiva. Here's Rabbi Akiva's principle, which we know from other places as well. Kom lacha shevshar lasutam erev Shabbat. Enu docha et haShabbat. Any malacha that could have been done before Shabbat without any detriment to that which is being performed, then it's not docha et haShabbat. V'yishi evshar lasutam erev Shabbat. Anything that can't be done Merv Shabbat, Docha to Shabbat. Rabbi Akiva's statement is found in Perek Rabbalaza de Mila, where there's a machloket as to whether the Makshire Mila are Docha to Shabbat or not Docha to Shabbat. Question is there a dispensation for Mila? And when you have a dispensation, that dispensation opens up basically Hutra, whatever you need to do. Or, as Rabbi Akiva states over here, only those items that are absolutely necessary to do on Shabbat, those are Docha to Shabbat. Whereas things that are not absolutely necessary, do it beforehand. There's no reason you can't do it beforehand. So to sharpen the knife, you could have done that on Erev Shabbat without any detriment to what you're doing on Shabbat. On the other hand, to do the milah or the cutting of the milah, you can't do that on Erev Shabbat. You need to do it on Shabbat. So for Rabbi Kiva, the core milah is docha to Shabbat. The preparations, makshire milah, are not docha to Shabbat. And similarly over here, anything that is preparatory in nature, like the tchina and the harkadah, that must be done before Shabbat. Those things that can't be done before Shabbat, especially things like baking, where fresh bread is very different than something that is baked the day before, especially when you don't have refrigeration or freezers, that is very important to bake it fresh. And so therefore, those things are Docheh to Shabbat. And basically, from Lisha and onward, it's Docheh to Shabbat. And also, Milisha Ve'elech is also the terminology that's used by the Gemara with regards to Yom Tov. When it comes to preparation of food, what has been permitted in terms of Melechet Ochel Nefesh? And similarly, by Yom Tov, the permission starts Milisha Ve'elech. So that is a threshold beyond which that's something that we consider to be a daily preparation, something you would do on the spot, versus other things that can be prepared beforehand. The key difference that the Ramban indicates is something that you would do at commercial quantities, versus something that you don't do at commercial quantities, meaning that people can do large millings without any detriment, so they don't mill for each time at a time, they mill large quantities, and then they store those quantities in order to make small things. Again, baking, when you don't have refrigeration or freezers, everything is fresh, just like the bakery. At the end of the day, the bakery gets rid of whatever's there because it's not fresh. The next day, they can't really sell that which wasn't fresh. And so, it's over here, Lisha Meilech, it's something that's fresh, and Doche et haShabbat. Kol aminachot, yesh behen ma'aseh kli bifnim. Any minchat that has a necessity for kli sharet, it's done internally in the Azara. Ve'en behen ma'aseh kli, doesn't require a kli sharet, then bachutz, it's done outside. So, the way that Rashi explains it over here, ma'aseh kli, Lisha ve'aricha, the kneading, and the forming of the bread, hakol b'kli sharet bifnim v'lo b'chutz. They all necessitate a kli sharet. Therefore, they're done internally on that outside. Now, the Balei HaTosafot on yesterday's daf, on the Amud Bet asked, the Gemara makes a distinction in yesterday's daf between Kli Sharet and the Tanur. Gemara wants to know, how come certain items are not Kadosh? The Midot HaYavesh are not Kadosh. But the Tanur, things that are baked in the Tanur, there you have to do it Bifnim because it's seemingly that it is Mikadesh. Gemara said, what's the big deal? The Midot HaYavesh, the dry measures were not Kadosh. The Tanur was Kadosh. So then, the Balei HaTosafot say, Tema, Gati Kasha Seifa. I don't understand. Our Mishnah seems to say just the opposite of that. Our Mishnah says that everything has to be done inside for the Chavite Kohen Gadol. Lishatan, Varichatan Bifnim. Alma, Midat Yavesh, Nitkacha. It's pretty clear from here that these are dry measures that are being used. These are the Esronot that you need in order to make the Chavite Kohen Gadol. Chavite Kohen Gadol, you need the Isaron and the Chatzi Isaron to make it, because you make it with an Isaron and then you split it afterwards. So then, why is it that you can say, Midot HaYavesh lo nitkacha, but over here it seems like they were nitkadesh? First he says, Yesh lomar, Tav agav the Isaron lo nimshach, Chatzi Isaron nimshach. So the answer is that the main Isaron was not consecrated. That's what you use for everything else, including the Lechem Lepanim and Shtei Lechem, and the beginning of the Chavite Kohen Gadol. But the Chatzi Yisaron that was uniquely associated with the Chavitin, that was Nitkadesh. First of all, they say that's corroborated by Rashi. Early on, he says, V'yesh perushim ben Rashi shekatub behem b'sofet chelet. L'fi sheyu tzrichim l'Yisaron limdod bo shar minachot. Since they need the Yisaron to measure the remainder of the minachot, ko yachir mitnadei mincha, pamim motzio l'chut. And sometimes you take it out. Aval Chatzi Yisaron hayam yuchat the Kohen Gadol. It was only used for the Chavite Kohen Gadol. You didn't need that for regular lay people to use. And Tosafot with them says, that makes no sense. And the reason is because the way the Chavite Kohen Gadol are done is they are first brought as a full Isaron. They're brought and done in its full amount. And then all later on are they divided up into a Chatzi Isaron. Says, V'nira l'faresh. And this is the way he wants to explain this difference. The making of the lechem apanim and the shtei lechem is a dry process. The reason is that they don't come with oil. They only come with flour. They don't come with oil. So later on, then you add water. But the measurement of the item is a measurement simply of a dry good. And there, midot yavesh lo nitkadshu. And therefore, when they're made, they're not made in a utensil that's made for liquid items. Aval lisha varichad chavitin. The making of the chavitin, haya b'kli alach, was done in a bisa, was done inside of a kli that normally was used for liquids, which was nitkadesh, tiyesh b'shemet, because it has oil in it. The nimda b'log, umidat alach, nimshecha l'kulei ama. And he had to measure out a log shemet to put in there. And that log shemet, everybody agrees with Nitkadesh because of the Kli Lach. Once that happens, you need to do it in a Bisa afterwards in something that is a Kli Sharet, because it's already been Nitkadesh when it was put into the liquid measure. And that's why the Chavitin are different. But then he says, why then did the Mishnah only mention Chavitin? That should be true of a regular Mincha as well. Mincha Nidava also has oil in it. And that means that it's a liquid item. If it's a liquid item, then it becomes Nitkadesh. Why does the Mishnah only bring the example of the Chavitin? It should have brought an example of the any menachot. He says, "Ad nakat matnitin chavite kohen gadol lav davka." Doesn't mean only chavitin. Do adin shar menachot. Adu no shemen. Means anything that requires oil has the same din as chavitin. V'had lo tani v'matnitin al chavitin. Then why did the Mishnah only pick chavitin if that's the case? Yeshamar mishum de chavitin chalukim ishtei lechem lechem apanim ishtei dvarim. That's because it contrasts with the previous Mishnah in two areas. One is that lishatam rechitam b'chutz, by the shleil lechem lechem panim, the preparation can be done outside the azara, whereas with the chavitin has to be done in the azara. And number two is, the shleil lechem lechem panim, einan dochot et ha-shabbat. They're not dochet ha-shabbat, according to the previous Mishnah, but here, the chavitin are dochet ha-shabbat. And that's not true by a minchat yachid or minchat nedava, it's not dochet ha-shabbat. So since the chavitin had two contrasting items, that's why it's brought as the paradigmatic example of a liquid process that's differentiated from the shtei lechem and the lechem apanim. He says, "Va'ot nira d'matnita namiktani shar menachot." Maybe the Mishnah does mention the other menachot. Diktani seifa, because of what we just read in our Mishnah, Kol menachot yesh ben masekli bifnim. Any mincha that requires a kli sharet must be done internally. Upeir shakuntris, exactly what we just read in Rashi, that the kneading and the forming of it is done in a kli sharet bifnim. And even though Rashi seems to say that's the same explanation for chutz, which is basically there are two sides of the same coin, Nira the Faresh, Deimben Masekli, Bechutz, Atchina Barkada, Koi. He says that's going on the Tchina and the Harkada, not on the Lisha Baricha. And that's what it's saying. Tchina Barkada, that don't require kli sharet, they can be done externally. Lisha Baricha, that do require kli sharet, are done internally. And that's the explanation of how we get other menachot into that Mishnah. So that way the Bayit Tosfot, in a sense, solves the problem as to where are the other menachot. If I'm telling you the reason that Minchas Chavitin was picked is because it has Shemen in it, and Shemen is a decisive factor in whether it's Nitkadesh or not, because that's Kli Lach, and then it has to be processed in a Kli Lach, all menachot should have that standing. So either you have to say it's paradigmatic in nature, which Tosfot said at first, which is that it's Dochet HaShabbat, as opposed to the items that we mentioned in the previous mission, that's why it was chosen, or maybe it was not only paradigmatic in nature, that the Mishnah mentions Chavitin and then goes on to mention the other Menachot, because it says Kol HaMenachot. Any Mincha that has a requirement for Kli Sharet has to be done Bifnim, and that's a reference, as Rashi says, the Lisha Varicha, because those already have Shemen in them, and that Shemen is a liquid item that was Nitkadesh, and that's why they have to be done Bifnim. And Vein Behem HaSekli Bachutz is the other side of that coin, which is the Tchina and Harkada, according to the Balei Tosafot, where you don't require a kli sharet, and therefore they can be done bachutz, because those are all dry goods. And in that way, it's incorporated into the Mishnah, all the other menachot, not just the chavite kohen gadol. Shtei alechem, urkan shivat vachim, the length of one of the shtei alechem was 7 tefach, v'rochban dalet vachim, and it was 4 tefachim wide. It's rectangular in nature, but the edges are squared out. It's not like a rounded kala that you would have thought of. The shtei alechem are more of square nature. No, karno teha are by its boat. And the corners are for its boat. I'll come back and explain that in 1 second. Lechem apanim is arkan yud tfachim, or 10 tfachim long. Verachbam, and their width was hey tfachim, 5 tfachim. Vekarno tav, sheva etzbaot. And its corners were 7 etzbaot. Rabbi Yehuda omer, shalot yit'eh, so that you don't make a mistake over here, Zadad Yahaz. This is the same Rabbi Yehuda that we read on the night of the Seder, that says with regards to the Aseret Makot, the Tzach Adash Be'achav, which is based on the Gemara in Shabbat, that says that you should make simanim for the Torah, in order to make it easier to remember, in order that it isn't forgotten. So he gives simanim, the Tzach Adash Be'achav, the simanim for the Makot, whereas over here, he gives simanim, they're not making a mistake as to what are the dimensions of the Shtei Alechem, the Lechem Apanim. Zadad is 7 by 4 tfachim with 4 etzbaot of karnot. And the Yahaz for the Lechem Apanim is 10 by 5 tfachim and the 7 etzbaot for the corners of the Lechem Apanim. And their Feret Yisrael goes through the trouble in the Mishnah here of trying to explain how the word Zadad and Yahaz have meanings in other places in Tanakh that somewhat are akin to their purpose over here of the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Apanim. I'm not sure that that's what Rabbi Yehuda had in mind, just knowing that he about the Tzach Hadash Be'achav. It's not necessarily that the other words have meaning, it's just a mnemonic to remember the information that you need. So now, in terms of that the corners are 4 or 7 etzbaot. So Rashi says here, Kanodea, Shemadbik batzek lechol zavit. At every corner you would add on some dough. Ka'in kornayim, like horns, like some protrusion. Borech ha-keren. And that keren is dalet etzbaot, is 4 etzbaot. So that means that they put on like the equivalent of what we have on the mizbeach. The 4 corners of the mizbeach have those protrusions that come out. And those are the karnot. And similarly, these chalot, shtei alechem and lechem apanim were rectangular, squared out in nature, and therefore at the corners, they had extra dough on each of the corners to give them like a little bit of a point at each of the corners, or the possibility that it's referencing to the thickness of the end of the walls, or the face of the walls that come up, especially with the Lechem Apanim, which have those side walls, Although the Gemara in other places notes that the thickness of the lechem apanim was one tefach thick. That seems to be that it was consistent. They don't ever mention there. That's only the base of it. That's not the walls or the sides. Ben Zoma Omer, V'natata l'shulchan lechem panim lefanai tamid, lechem panim shehelo panim. So that it should have a face. There is also an alternate girsa which Rashi notes as well, which is shehelo pinim, that it should have corners to it. Rashi here brings two interpretations of what panim means. The first of which is dafnot. It needs to have walls to it. In order to have a pnim, an internal space, you need walls on the outside. Lishnachrina shelo panim zaviot vehenein arkanot. It has to have angles. It has to have an edge to it. And those are the karnot that come along with the lechem apanim, which is that not only do you have a pnim or panim, you have pinim. Pinim are corners or zaviot or edges to it. And those are these karnot at the four corners where there's some sort of extra dough that comes up or creates some sort of angle or protrusion there. And those are the zaviot that we're referring to that Rashi says, v'hein hein ha-karnot. They're similar or synonymous with the karnot of the breads. Ashulchan, arko yud, v'rachbo chamisha. The shulchan itself is 10 by 5. Lechem apanim, arko yud, v'rachbo he. The lechem apanim as well are 10 by 5. But here you have to get 2 lechem apanim on the shulchan at once. So how do you do that? Obtain arko keneged rochbo. You put the orech of the lechem apanim keneged rochbo shel shulchan, on the width of the shulchan, v'kofel. And then you fold it up to create the walls. T'fachayim u'mechsa mikan, t'fachayim u'mechsa mikan. And those 2 side walls are 2.5 tefach on each side. 5, which is the base that runs along the shulchan. And then 2.5 on each side of the walls that have now been folded up, that sit along the width of the shulchan. And you need 2 of them to do that. Ninsa arko mimalei rachboso shulchan divri Rabbi Yehuda. And so then the orech of the lechem apanim fill out the width of the shulchan, and vice versa. The 2 lechem apanim, their width will fill out the entirety of the shulchan. That is the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Omer shulchan arko yud bet, rachbo lav vav. It had a length of 12 tfachim, and its width was 6 tfachim. Once again, lechem apanim, arko yud rachbo he, agrees that the lechem apanim are the same size, which are 10 by 5. Notain arko keneged rachbo shel shulchan. Again, you place the length of the lechem apanim along the width of the table. Kofel, tfachai mikan, tfachai mikan. For Rabbi Meir, you only have to fold up 2 on each side, because he has a base of 6, so the remaining 4, you have to split up into 2 and fold the 2 walls up. But then that also has impact on the spacing on the top of the shulchan. The spacing on the top of the shulchan is 12 long, the shulchan, and yet the lechem apanim are only 5 wide. So if you put 2 lechem apanim over there, you still have 2 tfachim left over. So that's what's he's going to describe here, which is utfachayim revach be'emtza. And then it left a space of 2 tfachim between the 2 lechem hapanim. Kadei shedeya ruach min hashevebem, to allow for airflow through there, so that the breads wouldn't spoil or go bad. It would have some ventilation when they were put on there. Ama sha'olomer, shama yunodim shnei bazichim, shalechem hapanim. Not only did they have that space for the air, the 2 bazichei lebonah that go on the shulchan, they get placed in between on the shulchan itself. Amrulo, how could you say that? Hakvari ne'amar, benatata la marechet limonazaka. On the piles, on the structures that hold the lechem apanim, on top of that, that's where you put the limonazaka. On them means on the lechem itself, not in between the lechem. So how is it possible that you're saying that? And this is something that we've again seen earlier in the Masechta a number of times. When it speaks about the encampment, it says that alav, together with that degel, was mate menashe. When you say alav, it doesn't mean mate menashe was sitting on top of the other shevet, but rather alav means next to or adjacent to. And similarly over here, when it says natata la marechet, levona zakah doesn't mean literally on the marechet, it means next to, adjacent to. And therefore, you have a machloket here, Abba Sha'ul versus the Chachamim, According to Rabbi Meir, there's a space in between for the Bazichim, and that's what Rabbi Shaul says, that's where they put the Bazichim. For Rabbi Yehuda, there is no such space in between, so Rabbi Yehuda clearly believes that the Bazichim were placed on the top of the Lechem HaPanim, on the stack of the Lechem HaPanim. But even according to Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim believe that it was still placed on top of the Lechem HaPanim, and not in between the two stacks of the Lechem HaPanim, because they think that the word Al means literally on top of, rather than next to or adjacent to. Va'arba'a snipim shel zavav ayusham. There were four, what looked like uprights of gold. Mifutzalim miroshehem. They were split, branching off at the tops. Shayusumchim bahem shnayim l'seder zeh. Shnayim l'seder zeh. There were two for each of the tzarim. In terms of the snipim, we already discussed the machloket is whether the snipim stood on the floor or stood on the shulchan. That's dependent on whether you think that they were made kamin teva putza or they were made ke sfina rokedet. That machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina that we saw 2 days ago influenced where the snipim sat. Snipim are upright that go either sitting on the shulchan or on the floor, and then they run up the sides of the lechem apanim. And they're basically a structure that helps to hold the Lechem HaPanim in place. Now, that's done maybe in two manners. One is that it gives side structural support to the Lechem HaPanim, as well as the fact that the kanim, the poles that ran between the Lechem HaPanim, those poles need to be anchored somewhere. And so those anchors happen in the snipim. That's why when we discussed it 2 days ago, I noted it's not clear from the Gemara. The Gemara speaks about a form that also held the Lechem HaPanim, as well as the kanim, and what exactly was the interaction between those two and how they were attached to the snipim, that's not clear. But the Mishnah does say over here that the snipim did have pitzulim, had some sort of splits or branches, which allowed for the resting of the utensils on there. Again, whether that's those are the kanim, which seems to be the most likely scenario, which Rashi says over here, but take Rashiach kanim botam pitzulim, the heads of the kanim sit in these branches or these splits or these indentations in the snipim. Although, again, from 2 days ago's daf, it sounded like the forms that held the lechem apanim also sat on that. So the easiest way to explain it is that the forms sat on the kanim themselves. The way that as we discussed before, the kanim sit on the lechem apanim itself, going in between the lechem apanim. But those sitting on top, if they just sat on the lechem apanim, the kanim, these half pipes that sit on there, then, and you stack the next one on top of the next one, you said eventually it would give way and fall in, it would crush it from the weight. So that would be make sense then that these kanim that sit on top of each of the lechem apanim, they anchor into the snipim that run up the sides, and then in anchoring them into that, they provide both snipim structural support from the sides, but also then give the weight-bearing support with the kanim that are in between the lechemim that give support to the next one up above it, or the forms that are holding the Lechem apanim. Chav chet kanim. There were 28 kanim. Kechatzi kaneh chalu, which were a half pipe. Arba'asar l'seder zeh. Ve'arba'asar l'seder zeh. 14 for each one of the marachot of the stacks of lechem apanim. The distribution of the kanim, the Gemara will get to how exactly the kanim are distributed between the different lechemim. Lo sidur kanim. Ve'lo nitilatam dochet ha-shabbat. Not the placement of the kanim there, or the removal of the kanim. Are dochet Shabbat? Ela nichnas mer of Shabbat. You go in before Shabbat. Vishomto, pull out all the kanim. Vinotnola arko shel shulchan, and you lay them on the orech of the shulchan. It's hard to understand exactly what they mean. Maybe they mean under the shulchan. As far as the setting up of the kanim and the dismantling of the kanim, the fact that that dochet Shabbat is somewhat perplexing, only because what exactly is the problem with putting kanim on and taking kanim off? So Rashi later on we'll say it's a problem of bone v'soter. But we know that there's no such thing as binyan and stira by kelim. Binyan and stira by kelim is only midrabanan, doesn't exist midoraita. And we generally have a principle in the Mikdash, ein shvut b'mikdash. We generally don't worry about dine rabanan in the Mikdash. Over here might be an exception because it's something that is a derivative of a doraita, not some new fangled din derabanan to protect against something, but something that's an extension of a din doraita. That might explain why over here in the Mikdash they upheld it. The Baal Yad Tosafot suggests that the problem is a din in muksa. Even though they are put in and taken out for the lechem apanim, they have use. Nevertheless, they're not moved on a regular basis. They simply sit on the shulchan, and therefore they have a din of muksa. And since they are muksa, you can't carry them on Shabbat. And now we find at the end of the Gemara in Shabbat that even though certain muksot and dinei derabanan don't apply in the Mikdash, there are many that do. There are higher forms of muksa or more severe forms of muksa that even apply in the Mikdash, and they uphold the shvut in the Mikdash. The last possibility is that it's tikkun kli, because this is what finishes off the kli, whether it's makav patish or you're actually making the kli, and then it would be a problem to oraita, and you can understand why they did this. What they would do is go in on Erev Shabbat, pull out all the kanim, and let the bread sit on top of each other. And then you would come back on Shabbat when they put the breads on, leave them without the kanim, and on Motzei Shabbat, they'd come back and put in the kanim to support the breads. Which is interesting only because that means at the way end of the process and the beginning of the process, all the weight was borne by the breads themselves, which we're worried about them falling in. That would probably be one of those two times be the time that you would worry about them falling in, either when they're aged all the way to the end or brand new. One of those two should have the problem. So more likely in the beginning you'd be worried about it, but here you stack them on. Maybe that has to do with the forms that were attached to the snipim and the dokranim that came out of the snipim. They gave them enough support. The kanim gave additional support to them, and therefore there wasn't all the weight being borne by the breads. And that's why it allowed it to be there temporarily, but over time it would be too much, but for short duration it would be fine. Kol kelim sheyu mikdash orkan or kosho bayit. All the kelim of the mikdash were laid out in the same design as the mikdash. It means that mikdash runs east-west, and so therefore all the kelim are also laid out there lengthwise would be east-west, not north-south. I'm going to see later on, discuss on tzarichet, as to whether that's muskan lakol, or are there exceptions to that rule as to the direction of the kelim. But here the Mishnah states it as a given that any keli that is not squared out, with the exception of the aron, the length is going to run along the length of the mikdash. The aron obviously ran perpendicular because of the way it's said in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. The length of the aron went to the width of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and the width of the aron was along the length of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Now, kol minochot yesh ben maseh kli mibifnim. Any mincha that requires a kli sharet is done internally. Shalu et rabbi zo minayin. Where do you know this from? What's the source for this? Amar lehem, areyu omer. It says, v'yomer elai zeh makom. The wording here is reversed. It should be eta sham ve'eta chatat asher yofu eta mincha debilti otzoi elachatzer achitzona. So here it speaks about the bishul of the kohanim and the afiyah of the menachot. They cannot be taken out to the chatzer achitzona. I mean, they have to stay in the azara. Mincha dum yoda sham ve'chatat. It's describing a process of the mincha that is similar to the chatat and the asham. Ma sham ve'chatat. Tunim kli, just like a chatat and a sham have a requirement for a kli, af mincha nami tuna kli. So too the mincha requires a kli. So now the Balei HaTosafot over here say that first of all, what is the question about? Where exactly in the process are we that this is a necessity to tell us about a kli? So he says, Avatnitin kai, the question is about our Mishnah. Below linyan kmitza mikli sharet. The Kiddush Komets with Kli Sharet Dairi. We already discussed earlier in Masechta that the Mincha has to be placed into a Kli Sharet, and the Komets that's taken off of it also has to be placed into a Kli Sharet. He says that's not what is being asked over here, and that's not what the Pasuk is speaking about. Because the process that's being done in the Pasuk is Bishul Chatat Ve'asham, and the baking of the Mincha. The Kiddush Komets has nothing to do with that. That's not relevant to the baking or the baking process, number one. Number two is that the kmitza is connected shchita. The kmitza of a mincha is the equivalent of shchita. And kiddush of the komets is connected to kabbalat adam. And over there we already established that you need a kli for the shchita. That's why yikach et ha-machelet. Then we know you need kli for shchita. That means you're going to need a kli for the kmitza, as well as for the taking out of the kmitza. And number two is you're going to need a kli for the placement of the komets into a kli sharet, because kabbalat adam is done to a kli. That's already well established. Halacha belisha varicha v'afiyasha mincha mayri. Speaking about here, the kneading, the forming, and the baking of the mincha. De'ikei shafiyat mincha lebishul dechatat v'asham. Because the baking of the mincha is the equivalent of cooking of the chatat and the asham. So then, just like the cooking of the chatat v'asham require a kli, and as Rashi explains over here, you need a kli to cook something in. You can't cook something without a kli. Given that, since there's no bishul below kli, And that is done bifnim ma'ari. And we know that the pasuk in Yechezkel was talking about inside the Azara, because it says that you can't take it out to the chatzer chitzona. And chatat and hashem are also pasul b'yotze, because they have to be eaten in the Azara. So from there we know that, number one, it needs a kli. And number two is it needs to be done in the Azara. Then the Tosfot says, v'tzarech l'taktek, le'ezu mincha yitzrich kra. Exactly which one of these menachot do you need the pasuk for? In the minchat machavat marcheshel mafetanur, haktim behu kli. They explicitly have a necessity for a kli. And if it's a minchat solet, it doesn't require afiyah. So then you don't have a necessity for a kli, or it doesn't match up with the pasuk. So he says, not sure which mincha the Gemara is referencing to, because all of them have kli explicitly mentioned, and the solet, which is the only exception, doesn't have afiyah associated with it. But nevertheless, he says that the parallel between sham and chatat in the pasuk and afiyat mincha teach you that we're speaking about the kneading, the forming, and the baking of the mincha, parallel to the cooking of the asham and the chatat. Cooking and the chatat and asham are done in a kli in the azara. So too, the mincha, which is then done in a kli in a parallel manner for the lisha, aricha, and afiyah, must be done bifnim in the azara. So that's how you know both the necessity for a kli sharet, as well as the necessity that it be done bifnim. Gemara says, Ashukhan arka asara. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. The Divreya Omer, Fachaim Umefsa, Kofel, according to the one who says that you bend up the Lechem Apanim 2.5, Nimsa Shulchan Mikadesh Chamisar Shar Tfachim Namalo. That means that for 15 Tfachim up of airspace, the Shulchan is successful at being Mikadesh items. That is because you have 12 Lechem Apanim, 6 on each of the Marakot. That means that if you have walls that are 2.5 Tfachim high, 6 times 2.5 is 12 plus 3 is 15. So that's 15 tefachim high were the stacks, the height of the stacks. The Divrei Omer, according to Rabbi Meir, that tefachim kofel, that the shulchan was 6 wide. Never, you only have to fold up 2 tefachim on each side. Nimsa shulchan mikadesh yudbet tefachim namala. The shulchan's airspace is mikadesh up to 12 tefachim. That's 6 times 2 is 12. Vayika kanim. What about the kanim that sit in between the lechamim? Kanim shkuye mashke luhu. They submerge them into the Lechem Apanim, meaning that they make grooves in the walls of the Lechem Apanim that allow the piping to sit literally inside the Lechem Apanim. The top of the pipe was flush with the top of the Lechem Apanim. Top of the Lechem Apanim, you leave grooves in which the Kanim sat, and then the next Lechem Apanim was flat at the bottom, sat flush on top of Kanim. Kanim are hollow, half pipes that allow for airflow between them. So that's how you get the airflow there. So therefore, you put these grooves on the top of the Lechem Apanim that allow the Kanim to run across. Again, as Rashi knew, the Kanim are also supported by the Snipim on the side. So it's not that they're just all the weight bearing is done on the Lechem Apanim. My time up. Why do you have the airspace there or the Kanim there? In order to prevent them from going bad because there's no spacing between them. So, kamapesh lechem. Wait a minute. If you're going to do this in the end, what ends up happening is that they become flush together, and you haven't prevented the problem that you wanted. You wanted airflow between them. So we thought originally the Kanim sat above the Lechem Apanim and gave that little airspace airflow between the Lechem above and the Lechem below. Now you're telling me that there's a little indentation in the top of the Lechem that allowed the Kanim to sit. That means that you've just created a situation in which the bottom of the one above it is flush with the top below it, and there's very little airflow that's going through there. Gemara says, the Magalei Purta. That they actually raised it a little bit. The Kanim didn't sit exactly flush into the Lechem below it, but there was some space there. Vayika haupurta. So then how come you only said it was 15 tefachim high or 12 tefachim high? You have those spacing between the Lechem and Panim. Came to Lavi tefach lo chashiblet. Since that space was less than a tefach, they part of a rounding area. The truth is, the Baal Tosfot said this back at the beginning of the Perek, it has to be less than a sixth of a tefach. Because there are 6 Lechemim here. If each one of them had a sixth of a tefach between them, then 6 times 1/6, you get a full tefach with the space, and they should have counted it. So it has to be that the multiplier of 5, or whatever spacing was there, it was less than a tefach. And that's why it's not counted, because that they considered to be a rounding error. Say, v'ayika bazichem, don't the bazichem give more height to the shulchan? Begavei the lechem avoyatvei, they sit internally in the lechem. Oblah de lechem avikaimi, and they didn't go higher, or they weren't at a height that exceeded that of the Lechem. So that, according to at least Rabbi Yehuda, and the Chachamim in Rabbi Meir, then the Mazikim sat inside internally in the Panim of the Nechem, and they didn't go rise above the Lechem, so they don't add to the 15 or the 12 Tfachim at the top. Rashi says over here, he's not sure what the Gemara's issue is, because, casually, the Shulchan is not the item that is Mekadesh the Bazichim. If that's the case, why does it matter if the Bazichim stick up above that 15 or 12 Tfachim area that the Shulchan is Mekadesh? The Baal Yetos would say, Belira de lo kashamide, that he thinks Rashi's question is not a strong question. The Komitz Mincha, Miklish al Gabe Karka, Shekein Matzino, Besiluk Bazichim, Ashma Davik Komitz, Magabe Shulchan. That the Gemara says that you can take a komitz out of a mincha, a kli that's sitting on the ground, and their raya is from the shulchan, which is sitting on the ground where you take the bazichim off, which it makes it that the taking the bazichim off the shulchan is as if you're being komitz them from the shulchan, which would imply that the bazichim have a strong connection to the shulchan, and maybe even that the shulchan is the equivalent of putting them into a kli sharet from which you're going to be komitz the bazichim off the shulchan. And therefore he sees it as being a relevant question, and that's why the Gemara is asking, is it in that airspace that's Mikadesh? Because that question is relevant over here with regards to the Bazichim. Vaika Karnot. And what about the corners? Didn't we just say before you add on those corners there? Karnot, the Gabei, the Lechem Kaiflahu. The corners, they turned in internally to the Lechem. They bent them inwards. So as opposed to seeing that they were protruding upwards, they were turned inwards. So that's why over here, when I designed the Lechem Panim here, you can see that I turned the tops in a little bit to be what are the karnot. The karnot, which would have been these extra pieces at the top, they fold inward. I think that both gives you an extra feeling of internal panim to it, as well as pinim, zavit, a corner of sorts. But that's the addition that to the lechem panim, what was supposed to be a peren that protruded upwards now is turned flat inwards so that it doesn't add to the height of the lechem. The lechem alayu nachle. So wait a minute. You're assuming now that you only need 15 tfachim or 12 tfachim above the floor of the shulchan. That implies that it sat directly on the shulchan. The first bread sat directly on the shulchan. Vaika mizgarto. Don't you have the mizgeret? The Torah says that you have to have a, there's a tefach of a frame or a crown around the shulchan. Doesn't that take up space? That would then force the lechem to be higher than the shulchan, another tefach above the shulchan. That's number one. And number two is, won't that also create a problem in terms of the panim on the sides? Kamad amar mizgarto la mata haita. According to the one who says that the mizgeret wasn't above the shulchan, but rather around the legs of the shulchan, in that the mizgeret was below the surface of the table and surrounded around the legs. It was actually attached to the legs, which allowed the shulchan itself to be taken in and out. There's obviously an alternate opinion that says that the mizgeret was not around the legs, but was a mizgeret around the shulchan itself. And that's what the Gemara is referring to. It's saying it's kamanda mar mizgerto lamata aita, kamanda mar mizgerto lamala aita, pirkudei hava mifarkeda. It was not on the shulchan itself. Rather, as Rashi says over here, it's kain pirkedan. Pirkedan is a description of someone laying down. Makhlok and Rashi and Tosafot in a number of places in Shas, the pirkedan means laying face down, or it means face up, I mean on your back. The Gemara in Brachot says that one is not allowed to say Kriyat Shema pirkedan. So there Rashi and Tosafot argue whether that means face down or flat on your back. What they're saying here is that the Mizgeret was actually protruding outward, that it didn't take up any space on the Shulchan. So even according to the one who says that the Mizgeret is above the Shulchan, it was around the perimeter. It didn't sit directly on the Shulchan. It didn't take up any space on the Shulchan. It didn't sit on the Shulchan. It was a border around the Shulchan itself, but the border now extended above the surface of the Shulchan. The Lechem, the Gavei, the Shulchan, Habeyotiv. And then the Lechem would sit directly on the Shulchan according to both opinions. That is, even according to one who says the Mizgeret below, there's no question because the Shulchan is a flat surface that you can place it on. But even according to the one who says that the Mizgeret is above, the Mizgeret is around the perimeter of the Shulchan. And therefore you can place the Lechem Panim directly on the Shulchan. Kedetanya, like we have a bright, Rabbi Yossi Omer, lo yasham snipim. Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says there were no snipim on the shulchan, el mizgarto shul shulchan ma meret alechem, that the mizgar of the shulchan held up the lechem. As opposed to the previous pictures where we saw there was snipim up the side, over here he says the mizkeret gives structural support to the lechem. And that's why you don't need snipim, you have the mizkeret amulo, mizkeret de mataita. The mizkeret was not above the surface of the shulchan, it was below, around the legs of the shulchan, so it can't provide support. Tozer over here makes a comment, which he also made earlier on at the beginning of the perek, which is from Rabbi Yossi. It seems like there was only support or structural support for the bottom lechem apanim, not for above that. Now the snipim can rise higher and provide support all the way up. But according to Rabbi Yossi, the mizgeret was only at the bottom. And therefore there was only structural support for the bottom lechem apanim. And he says, mash v'chein tzirich hamada el hachala taktona. Sounds like that structural support was only needed for the bottom chala. And that's what Tosafot says. Go look what I said back on Sadi Dalet Amud Bet, that with regards to the forms that were there, whether it was a form for all of the lechem apanim, or only for the bottom one at the bottom. And Tosafot says from here, it sounds like, at least according to Rabbi Yossi, the form was only at the bottom. It was not up the whole stack. And now the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the Divrei HaOmer Mizgarto the Mata Haita, according to the one who says that the frame or the molding was around the legs of the Shulchan, Tavla Mitapechet Tmeya. Then we know for sure that a board that can be flipped around and is flat on both sides and can be used on both sides. You can see that over here in the picture. If you frame out the legs with the mizgeret, then there was a flat piece of wood that sat on top, which was the shulchan, and it could be flipped over either side, meaning that either side was usable and functioned in the same way. So according to that opinion, it's clear that a tavla, a flat tabletop that can be flipped over, is mikabel tuma. We'll see why in a second. According to the one who says that the frame was above the shulchan, meaning that it was a molding around the flat surface of the shulchan that could be removed from the legs, the mizgeret was attached to the tabletop, not to the legs, then the shulchan can only be used on one side, not on both sides. That's number one. And number two is it had a toch. It had an internal space, not just a flat piece of wood. And therefore for him, tabla mitapechet, a flat piece of wood that could be used on either side, tibayiloch. Then you would have a question as to what was the din in terms of tumah. The Gemara says, michlau, the shulchan bar kabulei tumahu. That implies that the shulchan was able to be mikabel tumah. Because you just said to me, if the mizgeret is down below, then the tabletop, which is a flat piece of wood that can be used on either side, clearly can become tameh, because you must believe that the shulchan can become tameh. How do you know, or why is it that the shulchan becomes tameh? Kliyetz asoy lenachatu. It is a wooden utensil that is made to be stationary. When it comes to the kelim that become tameh, in the Torah, the kelim are compared to a sack. Therefore, the features of a sack are things that become tameh. One of the features of a sack is that it has an internal space. It needs a toch. So that's one of the features by materials that are compared to the sack, including eitz, that it requires an internal space. That's number one. Number two is, it is something that you lift when it's full and you lift when it's empty. It's something for hauling or moving things. It's not something that's left stationary in place. Therefore, if something is a stationary unit and doesn't move, then it's not mekabel tuma as a kli. So the shulchan in the Mikdash isn't made to be moved around. It stays in place all the time. And even though when it comes to the Mishkan, the shulchan itself was carried when they moved, that was just when they were traveling. But as soon as they came to a encampment, the shulchan went in its place and didn't move anymore. So it's not something that's made to be moved. It's something that's made to be in place and has a particular place. Okay, hey, it's asui the nachat. A wooden utensil that's not meant to be moved, ein mikabel tuma. My daima, what's the reasoning? As we explained, dumia the sack, binan, it has to be similar to a sack. Ma sack metatel malei mireikan, just like a sack is carried full and empty. Avkol metatel malei mireikan. So too, this item has to be something that is carried around, both full and empty. So number one, it's not something that is stationary, it doesn't move at all. Also, from this chazal, learn that if it's something that when it's filled, weighs so much that you can't move it, even though when you empty it, you can move it, that also is something that is considered to be a kli, the nachat, and it's not mekabel tuma. So here, if the shulchan is made to be stationary in place, then why is it mekabel tuma? Where it says, shulchanami mitaltel malei reikan. The shulchan is also carried empty and full. Now, empty and full is just an expression of the sack. Or it could be a reference to the fact that when the lechem panim are on it, normally you wouldn't be moving it. It would be stationary in place. But here it's telling you that even when the lechem panim are on it, we move it. That's because the reish lokish. Damar reish lokish. Ma dichtiv al shulchan tohor. Why does it call the shulchan of the lechem panim shulchan tohor? Tohor, miklal the ika tameh. The fact that it modifies it and calls it the shulchan tohor implies that sometimes it could be tameh. Now it's obviously not the pashtura pasuk. Pashtura pasuk means the shulchan tohor means that it's clear or clean on top. There's nothing on the top of the shulchan. It's a completely bare shulchan. The lechem panim are placed on top of that, but the shulchan itself is tahor, has a top or a clear top to it. And that's similar to the zahab tahor that is used by the menorah, means a clean or pure type of zahab. So those claim are called tahorim, not because they're tahor versus tamei. Tahor means clean or pure. Over here, the chazal are taking the word tahor to mean something that is spiritually pure, and that means that it can have spiritual defilement. It can have tuma associated with it. Ella melameich bagbino to the olei regalim. So it is picked up and it is shown to the olei regalim, a marim bo lechem, and they show them the lechem apanim that's on the shulchan. Omrim lam reuchi batchem lifnei hamakom. See how beloved you are before Hashem. Kedivrei Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, like the memory of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Damar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, neis gadol nase belechem apanim. There was a great miracle with the lechem apanim. Siluko kesiduro. When it was removed from the shulchan, it was as fresh as when it was put on the shulchan. And that is a week later. The lechemim are baked on Friday, put on the shulchan on Shabbat, and then only taken off on the following Shabbat. And the miracle is that when they were taken off, they were just as warm, just as fresh as when they were put on. That was a miracle. Shenemar, from the pasuk that we quoted from Shmuel yesterday by David HaMelech, when he goes to get the lechem from the kohanim in Nov Ira Kohanim, it says there, Lasum lechem cham biyom hilakcho. The simple reading of the pasuk is that they put the fresh lechem on biyom hilakcho when they take off the old lechem. When the old lechem is taken off, they only take it off when they replace it with the new hot lechem. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi reads it, Lasum lechem cham biyom hilakcho. On the day of its removal is the same as the day of its placement. So just like on the day of its placement, it's hot and fresh. So too on the day of its removal, it is hot and fresh. And that is the miracle. So in order to show the chiba of Bnei Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they used to bring the shulchan out with the lechemim on the regel for the olei regalim to see. And the truth is that how they saw that it was fresh was not so easy to understand. Either the kohanim that are there tell them, can see how fresh it is, or maybe there was, when you have hot bread, there's some sort of moisture or steam or something that comes off the hot bread. Maybe like you're saying, maybe the smell of the hot bread smelled like fresh hot bread. Because they did that, that meant that the shulchan was picked up and carried malei v'reikan, was carried with the lechemim on it when it was malei. So that makes it that it's not a kli hasoy lenachat. It's not a wooden kli that's made to be stationary because it's moved. And because it's moved, it is mikabel tum'ah. And that is also because of the pasuk that says that it's shulchan ator, implying that it could be something that is mikabel tum'ah. So then, why is it not a kli shasui lenachat? Because they picked it up. What about b'tibug le'mishum tzipui? Why don't we just say that it's not a wooden kli, but a metallic kli? A metal kli is not governed by sock. The materials that are compared to a sock are listed there in the Torah by Parshat Midyan, and those materials don't include metal. Metal is separate, and metal has its own rules. And that's why even a flat piece of metal is mekabel tumah. As opposed to all other materials, they require a tof. They require an internal space in order to be tamei. So why don't you say over here, Mishum Tzipoy, the plating, the metal, gold plating of it, makes it into a metal kli. Milo, it's not. Don't we have a Mishnah in Kelim that says, Hashulchan vaha dubaki or a dufaki? Table. The loose translation of it is it's a side table. Although the word seems to derive from the word Delphi, which is from the place, Delphi. This was the type of tables they used there. And it was really a three-legged service table that was like a side table. And today in modern Hebrew, dalpeik is a service counter. And so that's a similar derivative of the word that the shulchanot, the tables from Delphi, were made in this manner. They were service tables that had three legs. And so that's the shulchan ba'dubuki. Shinif chatu, that they got ruined, they got worn down. Oshechipan bishayish, or they were plated with marble. They didn't plate it entirely. They left some space open where they could place down the cups. Whether that means that they left the space so it wouldn't ruin the shayish when they put the hot items down on there, whether that was a receptacle that allowed you to put the cup in there to hold it in place so it wouldn't fall off. But if you leave that space, tameim, they are still tamei. But you don't mean makom anachat hatichot, that they left space to put down food, not the kosot. Shier in, the Gemara is medayek, if you leave that space open, then it is mekabel tuma. Lo shier, if you completed it completely, lo, it's not mekabel tuma. Because shayish is stone, and clay evin are not mekabel tuma. But because you left that space, it's not considered to be a clay evin, because it didn't cover the entirety of the shulchan. But that is bekula. We're saying that a table would not be mekabel tuma because it's plated in marble. So now the chumrah, where you're plating it in metal, certainly it should be mekabel tuma, like a metallic clay. Maybe that's to do with the nature of the plating. If the plating is a strong, affixed plating, Rashi says over here it's nailed on, so that it's really secure and it's not going to come off, then that changes the dynamic of the clay. But if it's not like that, it doesn't change the dynamic of the clay. Or Rashi says, omeid might mean that it stands on its own. Meaning that the tzipoy, even if you didn't have the internal wood there, would still stand on its own or structurally be sound on its own. That's called omeid. Versus something that's a thin plating that wouldn't stand unless you have the internal heft to keep it in place. The suggestion is maybe the difference between the Mishnah and Kelim and our Shulchan is Mishnah and Kelim is speaking about a significant plating that's on it, and that's why it takes on the character of the plating. Over here with the Shulchan, it's a much thinner plating. Maybe it doesn't take on the properties of the plating. Va, bai minei reish lakish rabbi Yochanan, b'tzipoy omeid, o b'tzipoy she'en omeid. When it comes to the Mishnah over there, reish lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan, is the Mishnah speaking about a case only where the plating is significant, or even insignificant, or thinner plating, or the other way Rashi reads it, the affixed plating, or b'shchipa et levaz bezin, o shelo kipa et levaz bezin? Is it a case where they covered over the molding around the side, the mizgeret around it, or where they didn't cover over the mizgeret around it? V'amalei, lo shnat tzipoy omeid, lo shnat tzipoy she'en omeid. It makes no difference whether it's a thick plating or a thin plating, whether it's a plating that's affixed or not affixed. Lo shnat kipa et levaz bezin, lo shnat elo kipa et levaz bezin. Doesn't matter whether they also plated the molding or the edge around the table, or they didn't plate that area. It's not the surface of the table. It's an edge to the table either that creates a toch or that runs around the edge of the table. And even if you don't cover that over, it makes no difference. And therefore, in our case too, gold plating on the shulchan should make a difference. Yes, the shulchan is made out of atzei shittim, but it's atzei shittim that are then plated in gold. And that should give it a metallic character. And as a metallic character, metal is mekabel tuma in whatever shape or form. Metal is always mekabel tuma because it doesn't have the comparison to sock, doesn't require a toch, and has functionality even in a flat manner. So now Gemara says, v'chiteima atzei shittim chashivei v'lo badle. Maybe because the atzei shittim are so significant, they're not batel to the gold plating. Because of their significance, they can't become batel. That's only true by wooden kelim habayim imidinat hayam that come from overseas. Tosfot over here says that is shem makom. It's a location or place that they come from. Otherwise, it might just mean something that is of import, something that has unique side to it. And it means that specialized wood or special type of wood. It's not a particular wood, but just wood in general that is nice, or something that has a premium to it. Although the Rabbeinu Gershom says that it is a specific type of eitz, the kli eitz shishmo altugus. So he says it's a reference to a particular type of wood, not a generic statement about good quality or high quality wood. Aval kli masmas, which is chashive velo batle shapir, which is a polished or coral wood, or some describe it as a blackened wood that comes from tropical countries. But nevertheless, it's very unique, very expensive, and in a hierarchy sits above any other wood. It's so unique and so special that it would never become batel to anything else. So according to Reish Lakish, who modifies the Mishnah in Kelim, it says that's only true that the coating or the plating changes the dynamic of the clay. That That's when you're speaking about regular items. But when you're speaking about something that's very expensive and very significant, like coral wood or polished wood, there it would not be batel to whatever is placed on top of it, whatever is plating it. Ela Rav Yochanan d'amar kli masmas nami batle. Doesn't matter how expensive the internal kli is, whether it's normal wood, polished wood, coral wood, all of those are batel to whatever plating is above it. Ma'igal meimar. Then what are you going to say? Reish Lakish, we could just say the shulchans make out of atzei shittim, they're so significant, they're not batel to the plating. But for Rav Yochanan, who says that even significant items are batel to the plating, and therefore in our case too, gold plating on the shulchan should make a difference. Shiny shulchan, the rachmana karya eitz. The answer is that the shulchan is different because the Torah calls it a wooden table. In Ochanami, in a normal circumstance, the plating might affect it. Maybe not for Reish Lakish, but for Rav Yochanan for sure. And that would have caused tumah over here. But nevertheless, the Torah says that it's called eitz, and for that reason, it doesn't take on the properties of metal, even though technically it is a metal kli, according to Rabbi Yochanan. That's an emar, because it says in the Pasuk in Yechezkel, HaMizbeach eitz shalosh amot gavoa, varko shtaim amot, umitzo otav lo, varko vikirotav eitz, midaber alai zeh shulchan asher lifnei Hashem. So you have a wooden mizbeach that is 3 amot high, 2 amot long, and having mikzaot, which are corners or at right angles to it, and its length and its walls were made out of wood. And then it says, Vedaber alai, it spoke to me, Zeh Shulchan, this table that stands before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Potach b'mizbeach, it's a strange pasuk. The pasuk opens with speaking about a mizbeach, v'siyeh b'shulchan, and ends with the table. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, Damrei Tavayu, they both say, Bizman Shebeit HaMikdash Kayam Mizbeach Mechaper Al Adam. When the Beit HaMikdash is extant, the Mizbeach is able to be Mechaper Al Adam. V'chshav Shein Beit HaMikdash Kayam, now that we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, Shulchano Shel Adam Mechaper Al Adam. The Shulchan of an individual takes over as the mechanism for Kapara for the individual. So that's why it starts with Mizbeach and ends with Shulchan, to teach you that a Shulchan will act like a Mizbeach. And as Rashi notes over here, how the Shulchan is mechaper on the individual, he says, denote prusa the orchim, because that's where you give a prusa to the guests, or really the girsa might likely be, according to the Shittim Kubetzet, denote prusa la aniim. It's where you provide for the poor. So the fact that a person invites poor and guests onto his table to join him, that provides the kapara. Now obviously Chazal in the Mishnah Avot used this pasuk also to describe about the nature of a shulchan and to elevate the status of one shulchan, one's table, to the level of a mizbeach. Many drashot have been said about the comparison or parallel between this, including the fact that when one eats at their table, they should consider or classify it as if they're bringing a korban b'fnei Hashem, and therefore their conduct around the table should be reflective of that nature of their being as if they're bringing something on the Mizbeach, which then has implications in terms of speaking Divrei Torah on the Shulchan, which is the nature of the Mishnah in Avot that describes the Shulchan as compared to the Mizbeach, as well as the fact that when we do a Mizumin or when we make Brachot over the table, there's some sort of unifying force around the table that looks at the meal as not simply being a necessity of the base man, like animals that have to eat, but rather it's an elevated type of eating that it gives the person the power and energy to go on and worship Hashem, and we have to see that eating as an avodat Hashem rather than simply a fulfilling of our base needs and the pleasure of just eating. Tosva just makes an interesting point. He says, "Ein shir zeh lo lemizbeach lo leshulchan." Features or the parameters that are given here in the puzzle in Yechezkel are not parameters that are for the mizbeach or for the shulchan. The Gemara in other places notes that the 3 amot of height are the part of the mizbeach that extends above the soveiv, which is at the 6 amot level of the mizbeach. And then you have 3 amot of the mizbeach that sits above it, so that might be the reference here of the 3 amot. The other thing that the Baalei Tosfot spend a lot of time on, and Rashi notes this as well, is why is it that the wooden top to the shulchan, Rabbi Yochanan declares, if it is separate from the mizgeret's not a part of it, then we have an answer that that type of item is going to be tameh. The problem we have is that we have many mishnayot and kelim that clearly say that pshutei kliyetz, flat pieces of wood are not mekabel tuma, because they have to be dumit the sack and they require a tov. So why over here is this flat piece of wood subject to tuma? So Rashi already asked the question, where he says, Vein tabla zu kasharp shute kliyetz. This is not like every other flat piece of wood where it's not mekabel tuma. Derach bohi beit kibula. Because its width becomes like a beit kibul. Since it is so large, it has a huge surface that you can use, then even though it doesn't have any lip to it that creates a beit kibul, creates a tof to it, its mere size creates it as if it has a tof, or as if it has an internal side to it. B'chol p'chut ekleyetz, aruy in the midras, mekablein tuma. And anything that is very wide, and can be laid on, or can be sat on by a zav, and is mekabel tumat midras, then it is subject to tuma. And that's how Rashi differentiates. He says, since it's so wide, and it has the ability to have midras for zav to lay on it, to sit on it, or to stand on it, that makes it that it is mekabel tuma, even though it's pshute kli eitz. Tosfot says that, what about the Gemara and Baba Batra? It says, daf shel nachtomim, the flat piece of wood that the bakers use to lay out their breads, form their breads, and then put them into the oven. How come that is only mekabel tuma midrabanan? That's what the Gemara in Baba Batra says. Over here, it would sound like it was mekabel it midoraita, according to Rashi. Why is it only midrabanan? So the Baba Tosafot first suggests, maybe it's according to the one who says that the frame of the shulchan was above the shulchan. That's what Rabbi Yochanan says. According to him, we don't know what the din would be on a flat piece of wood that flips over. And the answer might be in the Gemara in Baba Batra is that it is only tamei midrabanan. Or it's saying at minimum, it's tamei midrabanan. Or maybe that feature in the Gemara in Baba Batra is not following the position of Rabbi Yochanan over here. And in the Maskana, we drop it anyway. So it's just an interim stage that's not following Rabbi Yochanan. Inami. And then here is the big chiddush of Tosafot, which is, that over here, the tabla services both the individual and it services the servicers of the individual. Masak miyuchad, just like a sack is unique. And so far we've used a lot of the features of the sack to tell us about what is tamei by kliyetz, including that you need a tof and that it has to be able to carry malei v'reikan. There's another thing. Shishemeshamesh adam umishamesh tashmish adam. Just like a sack services the individual himself, but also services the servicers of the individual, meaning that items that the person needs, he puts into the sack. So the sack is both servicing items that service man, as well as servicing man directly. So therefore, I would include these tables, because they service man, and they service the services of man. You put cups, you put plates on the shulchan, and the person himself puts food or eats on the shulchan or works on the shulchan. So it's both a shimush to Adam and a shimush to misham she Adam. Motzi ani et sulam shemeshamesh Adam made a meshamesh misham she Adam. And I would leave out like a ladder that services man but doesn't service the things that service man. And similarly, it gives a whole list of items. Therefore, over here, the tabla is servicing both man and servicing the misham she Adam. As opposed to the pshute kliyetz of the nachtomim, where it's only servicing man, it's not servicing the services of man. That plated, that flat piece of wood is not made for anything except putting the dough on, which is what man wants to do with the table. It's not paid to put cups and utensils on top of it. And therefore, it only has one of those two features. And that's why it's only a pshute kliyetz that's mekabel tuma midrabanan. Because over here, where it's a pshute kliyetz, that has the feature of both being Mishamesh Adam and Mishamesh Mishamshe Adam, there it is Mikabal Tumadoraita, even if it is a Pshute Kliyetz, even if it's a flat piece of wood, because it has that feature like the sock. Even though it doesn't have a toch, it has the equivalent of a toch. And therefore, for the Baal Yatosafot, there are actually three different types of Kliyetz. There's a Pshute Kliyetz, which is Tohor the Gamre. There's a Pshute Kliyetz, it's Tamei Midrabanan. A pshute kliyetz that is tamei midoraita. A pshute kliyetz that's tahor are smaller pieces of flat wood. Those items are tahor the gamre because they're not made large enough to be mishamesh dam. They're simply flat pieces of wood and therefore they're not mikabel tuma. Then there are larger pieces of flat pieces of wood that are mishamesh dam, but not mishamshe adam. and therefore they are mekabel tuma midrabanan. And then there's this larger, there's another section where they're both mishamesh adam and misham shadam. Those pshutei kliyos would be mekabel tuma midoraita. The only exception to that hierarchy is midras. If there's a flat piece of wood that's made for a tzab to sit on, to lie on, to stand on, that would have tamei tumat midras, and that would override and make it tamei tumat midras. That's what Rashi tries to invoke over here in terms of why the pshutei kliyos are its meim, is because it's ra'oi the midras. Tosfot says even without that, it could be tamei d'oraita because of this principle that's laid out by the Torat Kohanim that says that if it's tumia the sack, that it's mishamesh adam and mishamshe adam, that it is mikabel tuma, even though it doesn't have a toch. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots, about a third of the way down on Sadi Zayin Amud Aleph.